The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McRae. Pam Johnson is part of the very popular free-for-all every Friday on AgriTalk. Pam's extensive ag background and many contacts in the industry provide her with an always interesting perspective on many topics. We explore farm programs, ethanol, the election, and much more. They are all our topics for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. 2019 performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, just text PROVEN to 31313. So as I mentioned, Pam Johnson is a Friday regular on AgriTalk's Free For All. If you've heard those segments, you know there is always a lot of banter between the guests. They discuss topics that could certainly be controversial, and certainly each person has their opinion. Yet they find a way to appreciate another person's point of view. Pam certainly has plenty of knowledge and connections in the field of agriculture, and I wanted to get her take on farm topics in her area that are affecting the country and how she sees the upcoming election possibly impacting farmers as well.
I thought it might be good just to start off with you telling people about where you live in Iowa and a little of your background, because you have, you know, quite a resume and you've done a lot in agriculture, but sometimes we just take it for granted you're on AgriTalk all the time. Why don't you start out by just telling people a little bit about where you farm and what you do and what you've done, I guess you'd say, in agriculture?
Sure. Well, I am a sixth generation farmer from close to this area, as is my husband. Grew up on a farm, of course, with three younger brothers, and when I turned 17 actually, I told my parents, gee, thanks, it's been great living on the farm, but I want to do something else and be more sophisticated and move somewhere bigger, like some kids when they get out of school. So moved to Minneapolis, went to nursing school, worked in the ER and surgery, and then while life is what happens when you're busy making other plans, I met my husband and ended up moving back to a community quite close to my home community. And that's where we started farming together and raising. We started off with 10 sows and borrowed farrowing crates and just kind of kept working and built ourselves up until we'd saved enough money that we could put all of our hogs inside on confinement. Raised two kids, two sons who came back after college to farm with us. And once they both, one came back right away and one taught for a while because we weren't big enough to bring two back. And then when Andy came back, then that kind of freed up some of my time because we were farrow to finish. I could get off the farm. And so I started volunteering a little bit locally with rural economic development issues. Learned about the co-op capital in the world, Renville, and worked with farmers. And the main question back then was times were tough, and we said, what do we want our county and agriculture to look like in 5 years and 10 years? And if we don't like it, what are we going to do about it? So that kind of whet my appetite with working together with other people on projects. And then got a call from a woman who was retiring from the Iowa Corn Promotion Board and asked me if I'd run. I said, no, thank you, but I'm too busy. And she said, it's the best work I've ever done with the best people I've ever worked with. And so she set the hook, and I tried it, and kind of the rest is history. One door opened another door. I went through the leadership positions and was chair at Iowa Corn. I think I served on 17 different committees there, so got a broad perspective. Was a delegate to National Corn and U.S. Meat Federation and the U.S. Grains Council. Ran for the board at National Corn and became president and served as an officer in 2011, 12, and 13. And then the officers of Grains Council and National Corn made a trip to Argentina, and what we were planning on doing was studying the competition. And what we found out there was we all had so much in common with biotech issues and acceptance of crop protection and non-tariff trade barriers. So we sat down, my friend and colleague Julia Schaff, and we started and built relationships with them and started a group, a maize all alliance called, it's maize all, a maize alliance, which is an international corn grower association. So we have worked in many different countries. We started off our first mission to China to challenge them on their approval process. And now we work a lot in the EU and at the Food and Ag Organization and at the World Trade Organization, and bringing the farmer voice to tables that really governments had been there before, industry has been there before, but there'd been a real lack of farmer voice. So when farmers from Argentina, Brazil, and the U.S. walk in together shoulder to shoulder, we represent 70% of the world's corn, and so people listen to us. So we wouldn't be anything without the farmers who also come with us. So long story short, that's who I am and where I've been, and love the work, worked with a lot of great people.
Well, I always enjoy the perspective you bring, because I know you have a lot of these connections, not only there locally, but nationally and globally. So it's always interesting to hear that perspective. I am interested, before we jump into some other topics, you know, we've heard all kinds of things about the Iowa weather this year, and I'm kind of familiar with that I-35 corridor going right up through the center of mm-hmm. Iowa. You were probably a little bit north of the big storm that flattened so many fields, but has it been dry for you this year? What's the crop been like for you around that Floyd, Iowa area?
Oh, yeah. We were about 60 miles north of the derecho, and we're so thankful. We've got so many friends and colleagues who are still dealing with that. But we have suffered from the drought. I don't know anyone in Iowa who has not. It's just a matter of degrees. And so I know it's taken the top off of our yields, because we spent much of August with very little rain.
So because of that, then, I'm interested, what do you find going on in farm country in Iowa as they look at this year's crop? I mean, where the crop is flat, and I've seen some of this crop, are they looking at total losses, partial losses? I know we've had some storm damage in the past. We have to have corn reels to try to get it up off the ground. What are you hearing from some of your neighbors, especially those to the south, what they're going to do?
Yeah, I have friends who have dissed everything under because there was nothing left. And, you know, we saw the green corn flat at first, and then it started to I have not been down there, but they say it started to smell like silage, and then turn brown. And really working with RMA and crop insurance to make sure that they weren't required to harvest that mess. Some of them have some fields that they're able to use corn reels, go real slow, maybe go in one direction. But the huge issue is infrastructure and the lack of bins or dryers and the steel shortage. And because of the steel tariffs, the cost of rebuilding, whether it's a steel bin or a machine shed or replacing farm equipment, is astronomical. So my heart goes out to those guys, because 2020 has been a hard enough year the way it is. They were suffering through the drought too.
I was just on a conversation with somebody right before this talking about Cedar Rapids and getting enough corn in for milling and so forth there. And I realize that's still a little ways away, but talking about the basis on corn, are you seeing that up your way too, as far as just those places needing corn, and what's the price done then for those that still have some in the bin or looking into the new harvest coming on?
Well, the price has definitely gone up, because we were below $3, and it was, oh gosh, I know the basis I looked this morning was 22 under, and I would have to look and tell you what the exact price is, but the price has gone up certainly since it was below $3. So, you know, there's not much corn left out in our neck of the woods in bins yet. So we'll see what happens.
You know, the big news, I would guess, of this day or going into this weekend has been some announcements about some of the new government programs. Why don't I just leave it fairly open-ended for you, and I'll let you take it where you would like to. But what are your thoughts on what's been shared so far? As we can talk crops, livestock, but the latest round with CFAP here.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly there have been a lot of challenges, not just in 2020, but we thought 2019 was horrible with the trade war, and we thought the trade war would be over early. And so we saw financial stress out in the countryside. I know personally of people who could not get their marketing loans renewed and so had to quit farming. So those market facilitation payments really helped people keep their feet on the ground because everybody was burning through equity and, you know, hoping that there was light at the end of the tunnel on the trade war. And then COVID hit and we thought, how can it get any worse? And then the derecho and the drought hit. And so it's kind of leaving everybody scratching their head. So the question is, do farmers need help? Yes. And it's very beneficial to, especially now when livestock farmers are getting reimbursed and crops that weren't insured wheat. There were some crops that hadn't gotten any help and some crops that got more than others. So yes, farmers need it. But as I said this morning, Nate Kaufman from the Kansas City Federal Reserve said, you know, the payments will really be beneficial, but we as farmers have to start thinking about what is 2021 going to look like in 2022, and do we have enough equity that we can still operate and make sure that we can get operating loans and stay solvent, because there's so much uncertainty out there now.
Well, and I think I had shared with you, I had a conversation with a local lender, and the conversation was, is certainly the payments in many cases are needed. It's been a tough year on several fronts, but is it covering up some other problems that we have? I don't know these days what is reality. And I mean, so much has changed, not only in our world with COVID, but in the land of payments and so forth. It's hard to drill down sometimes to know, okay, where am I really at in how I'm doing on the farm? Is that what you're experiencing, or how do you describe it?
Yeah, it is hard to describe. And I would just say that there are so many unknowns. I mean, there are when you're a farmer anyway, but you're used to dealing with vagaries and the weather and the volatility of the marketplace. But this is entirely different when you talk about black swans. How many have we had in the last 2 years? And the payments, we know they're not sustainable. We all understand what the federal debt is, and also the other sectors in American business that are also really suffering. And we don't know when the end to the trade war is going to be. Yes, China's buying now, but it's, you know, China's China. They buy when they need it. And unfortunately, by the time they were ready to buy from the U.S. farmer, prices were rock bottom. So they've gotten a lot of cheap corn and soybeans from us. So I guess, Andrew, I would just have to say there's a lot of uncertainty. And just when we think we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, it's like it gets dimmer and further away. So everybody's just kind of got their nose to the grindstone and trying to make a buck and be able to be in business next year, cut expenses, but yet still be able to put in those crop inputs so that you can raise a good crop.
Sure. You know, I had Jim Wiesmeyer on. It's been a few weeks ago now. And of course, I listen to the free for all when I can on AgriTalk. And one of the things that I appreciate is that Chip and the guests, you included, can talk about some issues that, you know, I think, let alone farm country, but in our nation as a whole, can get people riled up pretty fast. And you all do it in a nice way and a respectful way. And so that's really good. And I appreciate that. So having given that as the preface, I'm interested then in, with these payments and so forth, certainly this is an election year. So how much do you think this is different because this is an election year? Or do you think that this could be an off election year cycle, and the payment schedule would probably look very similar. How much is the election playing into what's happening in farm country through some of these programs?
Well, the questions laid out there on social media every day is, would we be getting these payments if it weren't election year? And I think that's a question we're all asking ourselves. And also, we have to make sure, or I think we're all concerned about how are we going to get back on a recovery to getting our money from the marketplace, building back those export markets, and, you know, getting the guys who feed livestock, a lot of our grain goes there, to make sure they're solvent. And then all of the trouble with the gutting of the renewable fuel standard and the small refinery waivers and promises about E15, but then just when you think there's good news, then it's like this week, then it was that President Trump announced he was going to pay those refineries who had claimed small refinery waivers, that he was going to give them $300 million, and the worst slap is that it was going to come out of the USDA money. So it's like every day when you listen to the news, it's almost better not to listen to the news, but you listen to the news and I'm just left shaking my head thinking, okay, what's next? So big things in the countryside is get our livestock markets back, get to exporting as much meat as we can, get those ethanol and biodiesel plants back cranking, and start selling ethanol all over the world, because certainly other countries need it, and we were just at the cusp of doing that. So that's where we find ourselves.
You know, we're still a few weeks off from the election. If we have a change in administrations, how do you think that changes the way we will do agricultural trade or agricultural programs, payments, whatever we want to say? What's your thought on how that might change if we see the Democrats take control?
Well, I read Vice President Biden's Rural Action Plan quite a while ago, and what keeps me up at night are the things I just talked to you about, and the things that jumped right off the page for me were support of the renewable fuel standard, support of renewable fuels, and then trade, working with our allies, getting us back into the market again. And no matter who's going to be president after this, this isn't going to happen overnight, and it's not just going to be the administration. It's going to take all of us back to getting this rural economy cranking again like we thought we were on this pathway to really good things.
You know, I'd be interested in the, I guess we'll call the political field there in rural Iowa. As I think about where I'm at in Missouri, then you go to Iowa, Minnesota. Minnesota right now shows, I think, Joe Biden leading by several points, and we could debate on the polls and how accurate. Iowa, it seems to be very much in the mix, and Missouri is the other way. It probably has President Trump by leading by several points. What's the feel in your area, do you think, with farmers compared to 2016? Do you think there's just as much support as support waned for the president? What do you think? Where do you think Iowa sets politically this year when it comes to the presidential election?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a guess, right? Because it depends on what happens every week with managing of COVID and, you know, the latest news of the day. But the DTN poll was just released, and it said farmer support for Trump dropped during the week of August 6 to 14 from 89% to 71%, and only 43% are satisfied with Trump's management of the pandemic. And as this drags on, I think it's dragging on people also. I know numbers in Iowa and in my community are just really exploding now. So when I was traveling around last winter and I was campaigning for Amy Klobuchar, because I thought she had a great handle on agriculture in rural America, and the one thing that really struck out to me were the people who have been lifelong Republicans who came to the meetings and listened and said, you guys, you have to present someone for us who's an alternative the Democrat who is a moderate so we can vote for them. And I heard that more often. And in my little tiny community, when we went to the Democratic caucus, we ran out of registrations for people who had never been to a Democratic caucus before and wanted to switch parties. So, you know, that's anecdotal, but we're just going to have to wait and see. I think there's, even besides the election, Andrew, what I see now is we've gotten so tribal now and in our own camps, and so it is hard to have a civil conversation with people. So people out in rural America, I just had a conversation the other day, and I said something, and they said, let's not talk politics. And I said, okay, fine. And that's kind of the way it is, which is sad, because we used to be able to agree to disagree and have really good debates. So I don't have a finger on the pulse, but my finger says that support for Trump is starting to crack a little bit.
I'd be interested how you think that is then shaping your senatorial election there with Joni Ernst. Certainly she has at times bucked the president, certainly on ethanol issues, and brought that to the forefront. So how do you see that Senate race shaping up then in Iowa?
Yeah, it's a tight race. Some of the time Teresa Greenfield's up, and then the next time I hear Joni's up, and then it switches. So I think, you know, Joni has gone to bat for ethanol and biodiesel and farmers, but she is between a rock and a hard place, holding President Trump accountable, but yet trying to work with what is and what she can do. And the last week when she came out, because COVID numbers were going up, and said doctors in Iowa were fudging the numbers so they got paid more, I've talked to people, and that was kind of the last straw. So, you know, Joni Ernst started from being a newcomer to the Senate, and I'm supporting Teresa Greenfield.
You know, I want to go back to something you said there about when you were out doing the Democratic caucus, and certainly you had the ties with Amy Klobuchar, but they said we need a candidate that we could support. Do you feel like that Joe Biden has been a candidate then that they feel they can support? Were his policies on agriculture, would they be somewhat similar to what Amy Klobuchar's were when she was campaigning for president?
Yes, because who's advising Vice President? Well, a couple things. Who's advising Vice President Biden? A lot of really strong ag supporters. Former Secretary Vilsack is one for the policy piece, and I'm a policy wonk, and policy is important to me. And also, you know, Joe Biden's not an unknown. Trump was an unknown, and everybody said, you know, he's a businessman. Let's vote for him. Let's do something different. We're tired of D.C. Well, my life for the 8 years as a farmer under Obama and Vice President Biden was pretty good, and that was the time when I was serving in leadership at National Corn, and there was support of the renewable fuel standard. And so for me, it's a very good, viable alternative for rural communities and for farmers and ranchers, because they can look back and see what happened during that administration. And Joe Biden is a moderate.
Take me down the road here, and this will be hard to do, but before we wind up this interview, let's go to some time period after November 4th. No matter who ends up getting elected, do you think that we kind of begin to gel together, or do you really think that, boy, depending on who gets elected, it could go off one direction or the other? Do you have any feel on where you think we're headed? Because I can paint you a picture from, hey, things are going to turn out all right, to, oh my goodness, things are going to blow apart. Where do you think we're headed?
Well, I think the people and the news reports that we listen to sometimes are the worst case scenarios. People I know in my community and in communities across the whole United States, can sit down and have a civil discourse and accept however the election turns out. Will there be some radicals? Yes, there have always been radical people and people on the fringe on both sides. So it is my hope that we can come together and the leadership will be there to bring us together, because that's one thing I really have not liked about President Trump is he seems to thrive on dividing us and creating fear and saying the United States is going to go to hell if someone else is elected. Well, we all know that's not true. Our country's, you know, presidents come and go, and that's the way it works. But the issues in ag country, they stay there, and we all got to work on them. And I know Vice President Biden already has transition teams working so that they can hit the ground running and establish a place where people can be listened to. So I'm confident, I'm optimistic that, you know, things are going to get better. But for me, they'll get better a lot faster if Joe Biden's elected.
Pam, I really appreciate the time, and I do sincerely mean it. I enjoy the time on AgriTalk when you're on there, and I do appreciate the opportunity that you get to hear some different sides of issues, but everybody at least seems to get along. I think you get along with the folks there on AgriTalk pretty well. It seems like you do.
Oh, yeah. We like to, you know, we like to fence and jar a little bit, but I think that's healthy. And I think it's healthy to be able to walk away and we're friends. So that's the kind of policy debate I did in National Corn and at Iowa Corn. So I think there needs to be more of that. And maybe if AgriTalk can be a place, I said last week, if we can be just a teeny tiny model of how this could work, if people treat each other with respect, I think it'd go a long way.
I certainly agree with you. And I did hear when you made those comments, and I have to agree. And I like to think that in farm country, we do a decent job of that. That certainly, you know, some families, you know, okay, they lean one way or the other as far as politically, but, you know, we can certainly gain a lot from talking with one another, can't we? And sometimes, I mean, all of us, I think, would agree, not one party has the corner on good ideas. You know, it takes people coming together and being able to visit. And I certainly agree with that. And hopefully that's what you're finding in your community up there.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when people in rural communities celebrate a joy or they're faced with a real challenge, neighborhoods come together, and it doesn't matter what church you go to, what party you belong to. It's just people helping other people, and that's why I love living where I live.
Pam, I appreciate the time. We will have to catch up again, and maybe when we visit again, we'll see where we're at after November 3rd or so here.
Yeah, sounds great, Andrew. Thank you.
Remember, if you miss one of those AgriTalk episodes, you can catch them on the AgriTalk app. You'll hear Pam and the gang every Friday. That AgriTalk app is another place you can easily connect with our Farming the Countryside broadcast as well. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.